This is the London FinTech Podcast, brought to you by your host, Mike Ballaman, bridging the worlds of suits and t-shirts, of finance and technology, bringing you insights, stories, and inspiration from the golden age of opportunity and innovation happening in London right now.
Hi, this is Mike Ballaman, and this is London FinTech Podcast, episode 82. Brought to you in association with Archover, Smart Pension and Synchron. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Steve Husk, CEO of Cloud Margin, to discuss collateral management. Collateral management is one of those behind-the-scenes topics that is a major part of modern FS. Cloud Margin delivers SaaS/cloud solutions for banks and investors to help them manage this process. As it's one of those vital but somewhat siloed topics, I doubt anybody in corporate finance, for example, knows much about it, let alone non-FS folks, I shall find some fine words as an overview. As I'm fresh out of cornflake packets, my usual source of information, I'll quote from the second best source, Wikipedia. Collateral has been used for hundreds of years to provide security against the possibility of payment default by the opposing party in a trade. Collateral management began, I think it means here in its modern form, in the 1980s. Collateralization of derivative exposures became widespread in the early 90s. Standardization began in 1994 via the first ISDA documentation. In the modern banking industry, collateral is mostly used in over-the-counter, i.e. OTC, trades. However, collateral management has evolved rapidly in the last 15 to 20 years. With increasing use of new technologies, competitive pressures in the institutional finance industry, and heightened counterparty risk from the widespread use of derivatives, securitization of asset pools, and leverage. As a result, collateral management is now a very complex process with interrelated functions involving multiple parties. Since 2014, large pension funds and sovereign wealth funds, which typically hold high levels of high-quality securities, have been looking into opportunities such as collateral transformation to earn fees. Wow, lots of information to unpack there. Talking of words, in a changing world, their meaning changes too. FinTech as a whole I now see as being what digital is doing to the whole of FS. So sure, we have incumbents and sure, we have newbies. We have FinTechs, new FS firms, say Zopa, and we have new tech FinTechs, in effect IT providers, such as Cloud Margin. However, as far as the second wave of the FinTech revolution is concerned, surely what is becoming a more interesting model is that all of the above are available Lego blocks for you building your new startup that's going to take on the world. If, as it were, you can dock into the likes of HSBC and Zopa and Cloud Margin et al., presumably you can achieve far more in the second wave of fintech than the first wave did. As all these new firms grow, there's a phase change from startup to scale-up. When I first met Cloud Margin back in 2013, folks don't believe me enough when I say it takes a long time to get on this show, there were three founders and about half a dozen staff. Now, two of the founders have moved on, and there are about 50 staff, and we're in the extremely trendy Bermondsey High Street area. So quite a tale of growth there too. Cloud Margin managing over $2.5 trillion on behalf of their clients. Plenty to talk about, so let's get on with the show. Hi, Steve. Thanks for joining me today.
Afternoon.
So, in terms of talking about something, you were saying that you like history. And I guess one of the good things about history is that there's quite a lot of it. You ain't going to run out of it. It's not like, oh, I've read all the books on that topic. I need to find a new hobby.
Yeah, I do enjoy reading about history. Not because I think it helps particularly in a work situation, but it's certainly something that I find interesting and something to just chill with at the end of a day and not think about computers and how they work. Or how to sell them, or the software that runs on them. It couldn't be further removed.
Most of history didn't have computers, you see, so it's probably sort of very soothing in that manner. History is my least favourite subject at school. I really disliked it, actually.
Yeah, but that's probably because they taught you about dates.
Well, I know. I remember being seven. Here's all these kings and queens I couldn't give a shit about, and here's when they're born and died, which I couldn't give less of a shit about. But funny enough, it is one of those topics where much later, when it isn't being taught and you haven't got to memorise a bunch of stuff, there are a lot of interesting stories and interesting things that happened.
It's about people and people's relationships. And you know, we were talking the other day, because there's a lot of history around here in Bermondsey, especially as it relates to Henry VIII and Thomas Cromwell. And you know, how does that happen? You know, the guy was doing a fantastic job for Henry VIII, and all of a sudden they fall out and he loses his head.
Yeah, that's unlucky, isn't it, really? Well, funny enough, it's quite a synchronicity, because last night I was in a pub in Bow Beach, just on the west side of Kent, which was Henry VIII's former hunting lodge.
He had a lot of those.
Yeah, it was a very nice hunting lodge, actually. Better than my hunting lodge. But I think the one thing, actually, that history, even my school history, does come back to me time and time again, is that back in the day we did the origins of the Second World War as the sort of main theme. And although I wasn't really interested at the time, other than just memorising it and regurgitating it for the exam, I think the one thing that was the back of my mind was, God, how did everybody let this happen, really? You know, it sort of, the water seeped up more and more and more until everyone was sort of drowning, as it were, in Germany. And obviously I became very good at writing essays about, oh, it happened because of this and because of that and the First World War reparations in France and yada, yada, yada. But that kind of thing has come back to me a lot in the last couple of years in terms of the increasing, what I see, totalitarianism that we see today in terms of nanny state, looking at everything and looking at all your emails and all that kind of stuff. And I can see that the general process, and you can tell me more because you know more histories as a whole, the general process is that things happen bit by bit, like a ratchet, and everyone goes, oh, well, I can't do anything about that, and just moves on with life. But before you know it, the ratchet has gone so far, it can't be unwound.
That's always the way, isn't it? I mean, it creeps up on you and takes you by surprise. And I'm not that conversant with the start of the Second World War. That's not a period that I particularly...
It was the Germans. It was
their fault. Yeah, I remember the Germans.
Apologies for all my German listeners.
Yeah. But it does, it just creeps up on you. And, I mean, there are very similarities between what, I guess, was happening and today's modern political environment, where you have a lot of global bodies trying, unelected bodies, who are trying to control what we do and how we do it. I'm not sure that that's the right way forward.
Yes. I think one of the things about history is that the process of change is never clear. So you have these small micro changes, and then every now and then you have some sort of huge catastrophe or it's quantum change is the wrong word because it's a small phrase. I mean, I just nearer to FS, I was at a very good event by the New City Agenda, the cross-parliamentary group, earlier this week in Parliament, and Lord Turner was talking about central banks and the problems that central banks have had, and Anthony Hilton, the city editor of the London Evening Standard, who's been around for decades and decades and is somebody that I respect, in that you read his average article, you think, oh, wow, you know, that's quite right.
He hasn't been usurped by Osborne, then?
Well, Osborne's the editor, but, he just does his middle column every now and then. Anyway, the one thing that I hadn't spotted, which is very interesting, actually, which is amongst the cognoscenti, the idea of independent central banks has kind of gone out of the window. And the view that was taken is that central banks are political by definition and therefore need to be under political control, and that central banks being independent was a sort of part of neoliberalism, which is now discredited as a philosophy. And I thought, well, that sounds a bit crazy, doesn't it? But in terms of the corporate QE, that the quantitative easing that the Bank of England is doing, for example, so they buy corporate debt, I wasn't aware that, for example, the Bank of England, using, quotes, our money, unquotes, because who else's money is it other apart from the people's, buys Apple debt, for example, thereby subsidising Apple's cost of borrowing. Now, you might think that's not actually a social purpose that the Bank of England should be doing. And also, it invests in fossil fuel companies.
But they'd be criticised if they didn't, because that's probably a good investment.
Yes. Well, it's an interesting question, isn't it? But the point being that, and this is a cross-parliamentary group, so it's founded by Liberal, Tory and Labour, I think Lords and an MP in that case. Not unsurprisingly, different parties in Parliament will have different views over whether the Bank of England should or shouldn't be buying Apple debt. And in particular, given where we've gone at the moment, which is whatever German bond yields are 0.2%, the point was put, which is that central banks are absolutely stuck. Because what would happen if there's a crisis tomorrow? You know, what are you going to do? Cut interest rates from 0.2% to zero? So, in a sense, it's run out of ammunition. Anyway, the point being, not so much to say this is right or this is wrong, but it's more just a historical process of change. Things go in one direction, and we'll take as an orthodoxy that we need independent central banks because politicians can't be trusted with the money and they will da-di-da-di-da-di. And that kind of works for a while, but then there's no real solution to anything in life. We're all going to die, and all systems that you've read about in the past will fall down.
Oh, that's a bit pessimistic.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, look at the bright side then. We're going to live forever. Is that any better?
No, not that we're going to. We might enjoy the bit while we're here.
Right. So anyway, that concludes the philosophy podcast and touching on history podcast. Let's get a bit back more towards the financial services sector, which goes on forever. We come and go, or you may stay forever, but I'm probably going to come and go. And FS has continued for a long, long time. So, what brings you here today in terms of you weren't always at Cloud Margin? in terms of the historical process. You see how I connected that so subtly?
So my personal journey here has involved a number of different software companies, financial primarily. So I looked after Oracle's financial services group for a while. I was president of SunGard's capital markets group, and I've done a couple of startups, Infinity on the West Coast and FRS, a company in Belgium. And being introduced to cloud margins some 2 years or so ago now, I thought it was a good opportunity. It was on the cusp of growing into something which I think is very exciting.
Absolutely. And as I say, I liked the idea originally. And 3 years ago in 2014, there were many, many fintech startups, of course, and it was always interesting seeing which ones of them grew. And in terms of the process, quite often the ones that have grown have gone through this phase change. I mean, it takes, for the sake of argument, something to go from nothing to one, as Peter Thiel would say, and then there's one to 10, and then there's 10 to 100. And so as somebody with a professional kind of IT, FSE, techie background, coming into something that started as a startup, how do you see this phase change process that organisations need to go through to go from literally having no assets under management or no assets that they serve to $2.5 trillion, which is quite a lot?
I think the analogy that's often used is that growing companies like this is often a relay. It's not a single sprint or even a marathon, but there are people who have skills at the beginning, and then as things scale up, and then probably as they're more well developed. I've done a little bit of the second and third areas of those raw startups from day one with no other employees. I've only done a little bit of that.
That's because you're fairly sane, presumably, because you have to be quite insane to go into an office on your own and create something out of nothing.
Yeah, I imagine you do. But I think it is about, when I looked at cloud margin, I mean, what are you looking at? You've got to have some, there's got to be some fundamentals there. So cloud margin had a good product. And I think what was very attractive was that in terms of the collateral space, which you introduced earlier on, collateral as a vertical is coming out of the post-trade space and very much into to the middle office. It's much more about risk management, liquidity today. And it was looking for a different type of solution. And I think that's what cloud margin could offer, particularly as it's based in the cloud, because being a bilateral communication of information about collateral, it's suited very well to being in the cloud and people exchanging information by that medium.
Yes, we'll come back to clouds in a minute. And before we move on to this fascinating world of collateral management, just finishing off on this thing. So as a kind of professional, if I can call it a professional manager or someone that's done it many times and seen many organisations, is it in large part or in some part a question of bringing in more structure into something that's formless? As organisations grow, if you've got 5 people or 10 or 20 or 50, by definition, there needs to be a more structured approach as opposed to everybody does the washing up and everybody answers the phone.
To some extent, it's a numbers game, but structure is really important. What I focused on when I joined Cloud Margin was the original founders around the company had built the product, and that was a very sellable proposition. What wasn't taking place particularly well at that stage was how we get that message out to the marketplace and how we focus on elements within the marketplace. Because you don't just want to spray information
spray
around.
Spray and pray.
Spray and pray, yes. You want to be focused. And that's really what I've tried to do. We've built up teams in APJ. We've built up teams in the States and more here in Europe. We've developed a partner strategy. We work with partners and try and build around what they're doing as well so that there's a best of breed solution. So that's structure.
Yes, absolutely. And also that's experience in terms of, or wisdom, if you like, in knowing what to do. You can't do everything at the same time. And one of the things that came to me a few years ago was that it suddenly occurred to me that in the city as a whole, there was a very, very poor understanding of the difference between marketing and sales. Now, I'm sure you can go on MBAs and all this and write essays till the cows come home, but having thought about it a bit, for me, the essence of marketing is you've got some product and you need to convert that into some message, which you share.
A story.
A message or a story.
Going back to the history again, I think having a story, and I mean, depends whether you want to use the words print or publish, but get that story repeatable so that everybody who goes out of this office is on message, knows
exactly
what we're saying.
And the purpose, in my definition, I mean, it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong, but at least it's structured. And the purpose of marketing is to arouse interest
Yeah.
In people who potentially this might be good for.
Yeah.
And then the sales, as I understand it, is that they take people who have got some potential interest and hopefully convert the right ones into contracts, clients. Because you don't want to convert the wrong ones, because that ends up being a pain in that area.
Good salespeople are those that can identify, there are plenty of opportunities, but can identify those opportunities that can close in a relatively short space of time.
Yes, which is always a challenge in FS, because some banks like to close in about 3 or 4 years on propositions.
And you need a balance. Life's about balance, isn't it? So it's good to have some of those in your back pocket, but it's also, you know, you've got to keep the wolf from the door. And, you know, you're talking about startups to scale ups, etc. You need to see the revenue coming in. So there's, again, there's a balance. You know, we can't just burn cash from the investors. We've got to generate revenues and demonstrate.
Lots of people do just burn cash from the investors, actually, but maybe we're a different kind of firm.
Maybe that's why we're successful.
Ah, that's an interesting one. Fintechs that make a profit. That'd be a whole sort of topic on its own, wouldn't it? And the second thing that I quite liked about what you're saying, which again relates enormously to, I mean, the kind of stuff that I've done myself, but also what I've seen fintechs do, which is this pray and spray stuff, which is you just scatter your seed, as it were, across the place and hope somewhere some of it grows. Mixing my metaphors entirely, which I quite like doing. There's another, I think it's an Indian saying, actually, digging 100 shallow holes looking for water. You ain't never going to find water if you dig 100 shallow holes. You're better off trying to dig one or two a long way and seeing whether the water's there.
Maybe you should do your research and understand where the water flows and then drill the dig hole where you've got a good idea that the water might be.
Yes, exactly, which is what the likes of BP and Shell do.
Absolutely.
They don't just drill holes all over the place hoping for
water. And that's exactly, you know, the metaphor you take into selling software in FS. I mean, we're not looking for water, obviously, but we're looking for those opportunities that can generate a good cash flow for this company. And we'll only do that by understanding how the market works, how to build a product that the market wants, and then going out with a message that people can understand, and then eventually getting to the point where you start to refine all those opportunities into those that can close this month, this quarter, this year, the next year.
Yes. Good. Okay, so collateral management. I'm sure you managed to be fascinated by collateral management. As we were talking on the phone beforehand, I've done some collateral management gigs in the past myself, and I can certainly empathise with what you say, which is that back in the day, that was a back office thing, and I'd rather not know anything about it. But because of the way that regulation has evolved, it's something that actually people need to know about, and it's something that affects the price of swaps and all this kind of stuff. So it seeps all the way up to the front office these days. But if we just give a little sort of run through in your understanding, so collateral management, in a way, has been around for thousands of years. And when did the sort of modern world start? I mean, Wikipedia said it sort of started in the 80s or 90s, I guess, with swaps, really.
We can go with the modern version of collateral starting about that time.
I thought a good historian like you should give me at least a sort of the last 5,000 years.
I'm sure there's always been some form of collateral that people have, even if it's the king's daughter that needs to be locked away.
Actually, I did exactly have that idea for my intro, but I thought I just couldn't face being attacked by a million feminists saying, oh, that's sexist. That's inappropriate. Serious podcast.
Okay, the king's offspring then.
The king's offspring, yes.
But modern banks, I don't think, would be so interested in that as a form of collateral.
But they want a king's ransom as a bonus, but that's a different subject entirely. So anyway, so in the modern sense then, let's just go to the swaps era and ISDA era and then regulation in the sort of whenever it was post-2008 and OTC suddenly have to be cleared and all this kind of thing.
Traditional enterprise on-premise collateral management has been quite siloed, so it's by product. So you're already talking about swaps and the like. So collateral management until fairly recently with the arrival of products like Cloud Margin has been siloed and it's been decentralised at the business unit. What we're doing, what we're being encouraged to do, if you like, by the regulator or the banks coming to us with where modern regulation is to bring that together into one solution so that they can see all of their risk as it relates to collateral in one place.
So I don't know whether it's sort of a simple thing to do, and I'm out of date, of course, but how many kind of product groups are involved, I don't know, in a typically large bank doing silos, collateral management? I mean, off the top of my head, obviously it swaps, OTCs, and I keep scratching my head, but are there 5, 10, 15, 20 these days?
So collateral management applies to all asset classes these days. It used to be, as you say, more around the structured products, but today it applies equally to FX as it does to a structured product. And what banks are looking to be able to do is to have a single transparent solution that's consistent and well, ability to communicate across the bank. And that's what we're doing. I mean, it's essentially what, well, it's at the heart of Cloud Margin is a workflow product, which enables us to be able to identify that collateral that needs to be looked at and to make people aware of it and that they need to do something about it.
Yes, and I think the last gig, and I've completely forgotten what it was now, something around all this Euro regulation came up to the HSBC one. It was still pretty much in the siloed mentality, and this is probably about 4 or 5 years ago, but it was clear then that, oh, if we all knew what different departments were doing, maybe actually we could sort of save a lot of money because, you know, in one of our doors we're shipping out this collateral and shipping in the other, and actually, do you know what, a different department might be doing the opposite thing at the same time. And there seemed to be the potential for huge economies of scale, as it were, if you could just draw a big circle around the bank and almost like internally swap collateral around between different departments and then only export and import the stuff.
Yeah, there's an opportunity for enormous economies of scale. Banks are often in a situation where they don't actually, as a piece of collateral, deliver the cheapest but the easiest, and that's because they have too much information. So trying to get a handle on all of that information, get it into one place, optimize it, and we provide an optimizer as a part of our solution, means that they can get closer to delivering the cheapest collateral as opposed to the easiest to deliver.
And regulation can be hard to sort of summarise in a sentence or two or paragraph or two, but what are the main regulatory drivers at the moment which are pushing banks to have to get on with stuff by certain dates?
It's a combination of many different pieces of regulation, unfortunately. It's not just one. You mentioned earlier on the fact that regulation is more political. In a sense, what would make more sense for regulators globally is to have one set of regulation that they're following. Doesn't matter whether it's in the States or in Europe or out in the Far East, wherever it is, that they're all following one set of regulation. Fortunately, that's not the case. As you said, political drivers for these things, so people come up with different variations around that regulation. And that's effectively what we're trying to do as well. We're trying to help our clients see through all the different regulations and where it's possible to be able to comply with a single set of regulations that work across products, we do that. But where we need to make differentiation because different regulatory authorities do things in a different way, we have to be able to cater for that as well.
Yes, so as FS is a social construct created largely by regulation, as the regulation
gets today,
exactly, as it gets ever more complex, then the nature of the problems they're solving becomes ever more complex. And therefore, a good solution can be an absolute sort of life raft for banks, or at least it can be very necessary to keep the cost down, because you can employ a million monkeys to try and work it out, or you can buy a clever piece of software and, you know, have half a dozen people and know what they're doing.
The big change, as far as regulation is concerned and collateral, came post-2008, as I guess it did for many pieces of regulation, but Lehman's had one large pool of collateral that they pointed their counterparties at and said, well, look how big a pool this is. That's certainly going to solve your problems. You don't need to worry too much about it. And of course, when the big bang happened and they were all trying to get their collateral out, it was very difficult because it wasn't as big a pool of collateral as they'd all thought initially. And what the regulator is trying to do is identify specific collateral against specific trade. And we now have the world of initial margin and variation margin, which is moving up and down according to market movements. And again, we didn't have that pre-2008. So the amount that regulation is affecting the risk management around this particular business is enormous. The way it's been introduced, it's obviously come in as a bit of a rush. It's made it very difficult for the banks to be able to cope. We were talking to one tier one bank fairly recently where they were saying the number of calls, margin calls, being made on their collateral system over the last 6 months or so has increased by over 20 times. Now, very, very few systems are developed with the idea of being able to cope with that increase in volume. So it's been good news for Cloud Margin in that we have a system that can escalate as demand grows, but it's been very difficult for the banks.
Yes, indeed. I mean, funny enough, you say that. When you were saying that, I was thinking that actually podcasts are structured like that. So podcasts being large audio file, for the sake of argument, 50 megabytes or something like that, people don't host them themselves. Because if suddenly, I mean, the Cloud Margin one is really going to sell, there are going to be millions of people listening to this one. So the bandwidth would spike enormously, which I couldn't cope with any server that I might hire, as it were. because otherwise I'd be running massive headroom. So you've got these specialist hosts with all podcasts, and these hosts basically will give you sort of unlimited bandwidth and that kind of stuff. But that's a kind of cloud solution in itself, because it ain't on somebody's computer, it's somewhere out there nebulously.
Exactly. I mean, we deployed on Amazon Web Services. We could easily start off the day on a single server and end up on 100 servers globally. And that's exactly what you're saying. So they're a specialist vendor providing a platform that we can live on that can cope with those sorts of demands.
Exactly. And you pay them and they say, okay, well, one of the things we'll sort for you is variable bandwidth. You know, one day you have half a dozen transactions, next day 1,000, we'll sort it for a fee, for a small fee.
And it goes up and down on a daily basis. And one of the things that I think banks have found attractive about cloud-based solutions like Cloud Margin is that as their volume of trades goes up and down, so does our price, because we base our pricing around volume.
Okay, so moving on to the solution then. So we've got this collateral management stuff that we've sort of touched on, the fact it's all changing, the fact it's incredibly complex, like so much in modern banking. And in terms of solving, well, the rough thing in banking is people either use Excel or they buy a product from the likes of SunGuard or Infinity or Murex or whatever, and then there are sort of the sexier SaaS software as a solution or cloudy people out there. It's a sort of newer branch of that. And in a way, as I say, going back to this sort of fintech, the likes of Zopa, new financial services providers, or the tech fintech, your kind of cousins in a way, Privitar, run a little while ago. I think you both share an investor. That I see less as a failure of FS and more as a sort of failure or more that you're disrupting the existing IT industry. They're leaving stuff on the table and new companies can come along and...
Well, I don't think it's just about the technology. I mean, I think we are faster, faster, cheaper, better technology, yeah. We can talk about how we do that. I think what's more important in terms of that story that I want salespeople and marketing people here to understand and go out and repeat, it's more about a real change in the way technology can help people with their business. In this case, it's collateral management. But just as you've just said, you know, around your podcast, and you couldn't host that on a server yourself, you go to a specialist provider to do it for you. That's what we're doing for this particular part of the marketplace. So it's not that we're just new or better, but it's actually providing a different type of solution that people didn't have before. And it's that which encourages them to take another look to see how it can reduce their costs, how it can be deployed far quicker than older on-premise solutions were, and the advantages that come with that. So again, another fintech term is that, you know, you're a disruptor, you're going in and you're changing things around. That for me is what the disruption is about. This, what the cloud provides is a solution, and it's all about networking. So what's at the heart of any collateral solution is that you and I are going to agree that here's a piece of collateral that's going to secure the trade. If one or other of us decide we don't like it anymore, we're going to walk away. And what we need to be doing on a regular basis, near-time basis, is looking at that and saying, okay, the market's gone up or down, and we need to revalue that. That's something that works extremely well in the cloud, as opposed to me walking into a financial institution and saying, I've got a great piece of technology that's much better than what you had before. Why don't you take mine and replace something you had before? Because we're not just replacing something you had before, we're actually providing something different.
Yes, it's interesting you say that, because I was having sort of acid trip flashbacks a decade ago when I was doing a gig for Landsbanki, which I mentioned on the podcast before. And kind of out of the blue, they decided they needed a collateral management solution, or the Icelandic regulator had, or the FSA had, or somebody. Anyway, they needed a collateral manager. So I'll be kind to the vendor and not mention them, but their name began with M and ended in X and had an R in the middle. So they used a well-known software vendor. So they sold the Landsbanki this collateral management module, which was virtually just a blank sheet of paper. I mean, it really was something of a classic vaporware. You know, it sort of fill in the blanks, but it was mostly blanks kind of stuff. And in terms of implementing that, you know, I had someone dedicated on that for months. It wasn't one of these, I hate these old-fashioned phrases, but like plug and play. It was like the opposite, which is almost like kind of script the whole bloody thing yourself kind of stuff. Hidden under the sort of the user requirements for a large part of this module. Yeah, right. Since when? That's 10 years ago, so it's changed a lot. Now it's clearer because of all these bloody regulations, precisely what's supposed to be done.
Well, that's the happy circumstance for companies like Cloud Margin. We see big changes in regulation, And alongside that, there are changes taking place with the arrival of companies like Google and Amazon and Microsoft and their cloud solutions. We can take that new types of technology platforms and apply it to a new set of problems which the banks are having in terms of the volumes and the speed with which they need to be able to respond to an ever-increasing amount of regulation. I mean, the big one that's coming around the corner that's a real nightmare for many of the banks, and that also covers collateral, is MiFID II.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you were starting to cover that in some of your podcasts as well.
I'm glad to say I don't, actually, but I had to do something with MiFID II back in the day.
So more regulation, how do you deal with it? Are the old systems capable of being amended, upgraded, whatever you want to call it, to be able to cope with that? In many circumstances, not. So along comes a cloud solution and provides a means by which you can escalate as and when required. And you're driving the price, as opposed to here's a piece of software that we want to charge you. You talked about the vaporware earlier on. I mean, the double-digit millions to buy a software license to install in-house, because that's the way it's always been done. And then it turns out that you need to spend quite a bit more on professional services to get it to work the way you want it to. What we do with our clients is, you know, live in five. We give you a username and a password. Try it. We don't have to give you any training.
Is that 5 years, 5 months, 5 days, 5 hours, 5 minutes?
5 days.
That's a nice slogan. Live in five. Sounds like some Michael Jackson thing. Well, no, absolutely. And, you know, we started with history, and I think it's very relevant. I mean, talking about how the roles of central banks may change. You get this continuous change over time. So it doesn't really matter whether it's Murex or SunGard or Infinity or anything like that. They've got this huge code base, and it changes over time. Like Windows does. One day you've got XP, and you've got NT, and then you've got Windows 7 and Windows 8 and all that kind of stuff. But at a certain point in time, something comes along that actually is a better solution by being completely different. So, for example, Android on my phone. Oh, this is this. It's not stuck with all sort of the legacy thing.
And the cost of that legacy is enormous.
Oh, yes, it's very hard to change it. I mean, I'm not being rude about Microsoft. I would not want to be running Microsoft Windows and trying to accommodate something, because you've got this vast code base.
I worked for SunGard for many years, and the biggest problem we had in SunGard was that operating systems, etc., databases would change underneath us. And we had an application which was a bit higher up the stack. And to be able to cope with all the variety of different banking solutions out there in terms of what they were running, how they were running it, etc., etc., to have a piece of software that is capable of being able to exist in all those different environments was a nigh on impossible task. And what the cloud gives you is the ability to distance yourself away from that. It really is, in many respects, I mean, people will see it not just in terms of collateral and financial services, but clearly the cloud and distributed computing like that is going to change many people's lives.
Absolutely. And we could do a whole podcast on the cloud itself, and it's not the time and place for that, but just in passing. And you will have been asked this question a million times, and I'm sure you'll sort of groan when you hear it, but it's a bit like relying on electricity and water, and you would just rely on them so much your life is surrounded by them. But sometimes there's a power cut and there ain't no electricity, and that's a bit of a difficulty. And then I remember once I lived in Bath, my first job after being a student actually was in a software company in Bath, and it was so cold, and the design of this house meant the pipes froze, so we had no water for a week. And until you live without water for a week, you don't realize how much you take water for granted. And just on the cloud, I saw something a little while ago, and funnily enough, I spoke to various people, and it was not widely reported. I wonder if that's a conspiracy or not, but as you will have noticed, quite a lot of Amazon's cloud on the East Coast kind of went down for a few hours, which is a bit unlucky. So obviously the cloud is as good as everything else, but actually it's probably better than everything else, but nothing has 100.000 uptime.
I would disagree with you there. I'd take a different tack.
But just on the facts, because I just read it in passing, so I'm not quite sure the story, but there was something like Amazon did have a problem with its cloud.
You're not 100% correct, but you're close enough, so let's run with it. But the beautiful thing about that was that because they're distributed globally, they lost part of their network, and the other parts of the network came up and replaced the missing link. And I think what you're referring to in terms of your, it was so cold because you didn't have any electricity and your pipes froze, etc., is that that's an old problem for which there is now a new solution.
Not at British Airways that had a server problem recently, and its whole global booking system went down. Very painful. carefully as we know. But of course, that's allegedly a poor IT design or something. And that's why you use things like the cloud with redundancy and multiple doodahs. And so like everything, it has to be done well.
And to blow our own trumpet for a moment, since cloud margins have been up, we've had 100% uptime, except for the planned downtimes where we have to do...
You should be touching the wood, not touching your book.
I am touching the wood.
I hope we don't have some downtime tomorrow. Okay, well, we've covered quite a wide area there, and it was very much my aim to give people a feel of this. People who are already in collateral management will know a million times more than we could possibly say in half an hour anyway. Those outside it will probably be best off taking away some of the general themes we've been talking about here, and I think there have been quite a lot of themes, and I do like this history point about continuous change, and then every now and then you need discontinuous change. Before we wrap up the show and ask you a bit more about cloud margin, Steve, I'd like to thank all the listeners out there, and it's always nice to hear from you, as I have been hearing from several of you most weeks recently. And I'd also like to thank my brand partners for the podcast, Archover, secured peer-to-peer business lending, connecting businesses requiring finance with investors seeking a secure and favourable return of up to 9% per annum. Smart Pension, who are fast, secure and free. Check out their UK workplace pensions at autoenrollment.co.uk. Cinequon, digital business consulting and technology services for top-tier FS. From startup to 7,000 people, 18 countries and $400 million of revenue. So you mentioned cloud margin off and on in passing, Steve, in the context of the collateral world and what's happening and how firms such as yours can do it differently. In terms of the millions of users who are going to spike the bandwidth of Blueberry when they all try to listen to this one, what key messages or stories in your phrase? Stories, I don't like stories so much because stories tend to go on a bit. I quite like the idea of stories, but messages. Have you got to sort of share with the folks who are listening? I mean, which of the ones out there should be calling you straight away and asking for your services?
Well, sophisticated collateral management solutions are previously seen as nice to have, but with the advent of more stringent liquidity and capital standards, the whole of the financial services sector, from buy-side firms through to sell-side and across the board in terms of size, are pushing for ever greater cost efficiencies and better information. Collateral is right in the crosshairs for compliance. And in order to meet these new regulations, more proactive collateral management is a necessity, not a nice to have. So that's really what Cloud Margin is attempting to address. We see ourselves as a significant part of a firm's risk management solution by providing operation effectiveness and resolution or dispute planning. We mentioned it earlier on in terms of the king's daughter. The problem with a lot of collateral is that people dispute the value of that collateral. So is she worth this or is she worth more than that?
Or is he worth this?
Or she or he.
Or on Underground recently, it sort of did my head in. They're no longer allowed to say ladies and gentlemen on the London Underground, apparently, because it discriminates against the middle. So anyway, whatever.
Sorry, I'm showing my age properly. Collateral often gets disputed.
It's a metaphor.
The workflow is really important to be able to have that consistent and continuous view of what's happening on a much more regular basis than when it was ever needed before. So delivered as a cloud solution, cloud margins are an affordable, fast deployed solution that is a single version, can be used by all users. There's only one version that all our users, whether the biggest bank in the world or mega bank or whether they're a small buy-side firm, they all use exactly the same functionality. And we price that according to the volume that they push through the system.
And having seen what we used to call in the old days IT, from most of the angles on the compass, I absolutely resonate with what you say earlier about the amount of professional services times that it can take to install packages. I've seen that for decades, and it's certainly a grand claim, and it certainly means that you should automatically be on anybody's shortlist for consideration. This stuff can potentially be running in a matter of days rather than months, because historically we were talking 5 months more than 5 days.
The original design philosophy, and again back to the startup scale-up, was that the buy side, as you mentioned, traditionally tend to use more Excel-type solutions. And it was that market, that target addressable market, that Cloud Margin was initially looking for. So replace the Excel spreadsheet with a more robust professional solution in the cloud. What we've actually found as we've scaled up is that it's the sell side who are looking for a portal type of solution where they can post their collateral and include the buy side in a two-sided agreement. So being in the cloud again, the network communication enabling both parties to look at the information more or less at the same time in near time is a key differentiator of what we're offering.
Excellent. Well, that sounds nice and clean. And obviously people out there who haven't heard of you and are in this area really ought to check out what a 21st century firm who's focused on doing one thing and doing one thing well in a modern way can deliver for you, as opposed to, or in partnership with your existing systems who may offer the same or the better or worse, but you can decide for yourselves. And as I say, I've known Claire Margin more off than on, but I've known you guys for 3 years. You've stuck out in the first place and you've clearly been very successful now, and it's clearly an area where there's a small percentage of the UK whose day job is a hell of a lot more difficult because of all this regulation. They've got to sort it somehow, and you know, potentially you can help them sort it out. So I wish you every success in the future, Steve.
Well, come back and see us in another 3 years when hopefully it'll be much bigger than this.
No, exactly. You'll have taken over the world and know even more history by then. Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks for listening. If you have consulting, advisory / non-exec, or media needs in the FS or fintech space, get in touch with me at mike@londonfintechpodcast.com.
We could sit in a bender all day, watching the firelight dance, watching the firelight dance. We could walk in the mountains before dawn, watching a happy moon ride, watching a happy moon ride. To come away from the city, but with the tarmac so dead and the people so sad. Come away from the city, but with the faces so gray, with the pain of the everyday. The mountains and the trees. Can you see what I mean? Can you see what I mean? We fit in between the earth and the sky. Kiss the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. Wave the city goodbye. City goodbye. Watch the firelight dance with me. 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 Watch the firelight dance with me.